Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome back to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by our friends, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, and of course, the Madison Teamsters Local 695. With us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I'm just going to cut right to the chase here. This is the president a couple days ago.
Dr. Fauci said earlier this week that the lag in testing was, in fact, a failing. Do you take responsibility for that?
Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all, because we were given a set of circumstances, and we were given rules, regulations, and specifications from a different time.
You said that you don't take responsibility, but you did disband the White House pandemic office, and the officials that were working in that office left this administration abruptly. So what responsibility do you take to that? And the officials that worked in that office said that the White House lost valuable time because that office wasn't disbanded. What do you make of that?
Well, I just think it's a nasty question, because what we've done is, and Tony has said numerous times that we've saved thousands of lives because of the quick closing. And when you say me, I didn't do it.
All right. Then, a couple days later,
here's the other day you said that you were not responsible for the testing shortfall. Very simple question. Does the buck stop with you? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your response to this crisis?
I'd rate it a 10. I think we've done a great job. I would rate ourselves and the professionals. I think the professionals have done a fantastic job.
I think former Chicago Mayor Michael Blandy gave himself a 10 when responding to the blizzard of 1979. But that doesn't...
about the percent of the vote he got. Well, running for re-election, I think.
That's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Specifications... regulations, different time, professionals. I mean, you could actually, the beauty of those clips, Sly, mm-hmm. you could hear the president making up excuses in real time. You know, he was like trying to think about how he could talk around it, you know, and it's one of our favorite words, we've used it often, a tragic moment in American history, because all he had to say was, we didn't know everything we know now, and we're going to keep making adjustments as we know more. If we haven't done something right, we're going to get it right, and that's the bottom line. You know what I mean? That would be what a president would say. But no, Donald Trump is like, I have no responsibility for the things I did. It's nasty to ask me about it, and I'm doing perfect. And I just hope that people are keeping these clips, right? Because they really are going to be useful as we head toward November.
Here is Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker talking about what happened as people came back from all over the world to America.
Governor Pritzker, let me start with you, with what happened overnight at O'Hare. And again, you weren't the only airport, but every major international airport seemed to have a similar situation. Dr. Fauci seemed to say, look, that is what's going to happen when you come back into this country. What do you believe should have been done that wasn't done?
Well, that's not right. I mean, I have enormous respect for Dr. Fauci, but that's just incorrect. We knew when the president gave the orders that European travel back to the United States was going to be cut off, that there would be an influx of people, Americans and others, that would come before the final cutoff. So what should have happened? They should have increased the Customs and Border Patrol numbers, and they should have increased the number of CDC personnel on the ground doing those checks. They did neither of those. So last night, as people were flooding into O'Hare Airport, they were stuck in a small area, hundreds and hundreds of people, and that's exactly what you don't want in this pandemic. So we had that problem, and then today it's going to be even worse. There are a larger number of flights with more people coming, and they seem completely unprepared.
You have not gotten any reassurance from customs officials that they are going to have more folks on hand today?
Well, here's what I got. I got a call at about 11 o'clock last night after that tweet from a White House staffer who yelled at me about the tweet. That is what I got. Now, we've been talking to Customs and Border Patrol officials directly on the ground at O'Hare. Mm-hmm. I've been working with the mayor and our senators to make sure that we're getting the federal government to pay attention to this problem, because we can't have it happen all day today.
Governor Pritzker, Governor Whitmer, Governor Cuomo.
Yeah, especially Cuomo.
Yeah, they're all, you know, they're taking the lead in this. And
they're governing.
They're governing, and but they're getting yelled at by the President of the United States.
Yeah, you know, I think Pritzker, and I respected his answer, it was a detailed, thoughtful answer from an actual competent human being. But I think he could have, you know, when he was asked what could they have done differently, he could have just done it in one word: think. Right? Because if we're telling people to socially distance and not to be in large crowds, and especially not to be in large crowds of people who've been, you know, all over in lots of places where they might have been exposed to virus, you know, one of the things you would do is think about how you would use one of the more crowded places around, which is that customs and border place at the airport.
Right.
They didn't, this is the bottom line, Sly. We don't even have to get complicated on this. These federal authorities, too frequently, are not even thinking. They're not even sitting saying, geez, are there any reasons why we might consider doing it a little differently? Like maybe, you know, literally working with air traffic control and saying, you know, let's reschedule planes for when they land, or when they do land, even though it's difficult, let's keep them on the tarmac and not, you know, bring passengers off until we can bring them off in groups where they can, you know, move. This is not hard. You and I, who are not exactly disaster planners, could figure this out in a minute. And they're not doing that. That is one of the critical problems of this situation. The governors are doing it. But let me just give a comparison here to what we just saw, what we have seen at O'Hare, when we were already deep into this thing and should have a full understanding of the crisis. Do you know what they're doing in China right now when planes land? Because China has basically stopped this thing. They haven't totally succeeded in every way, but they've essentially shown a model for how to stop it.
And they have all our respirators.
Yeah, and they'll make more because they have factories.
No, they didn't. No.
Yeah.
No. The company that made respirators in America, when China started having this breakout, they shipped them all to China. And I don't blame them. I understand why that happened.
Yeah,
but they're in China.
I got you. Yeah, look, there's a whole bunch of problems there. But let me go to this core thing about this plane issue, just to give you an example. Because these people should be conscious of how you deal with these things. When a plane lands in Beijing right now, that plane is met on the tarmac by a group of officials and others in hazmat suits. They go on the plane, they lead everybody off the plane, and they get into buses, and they go to a secure center where they are quarantined for 14 days before they can enter Chinese society. That's what's happening right now in a country that is trying to stop, and basically has succeeded, in the United. I'm not even saying I like that. I think there are probably much more humane ways to do it. But the bottom line is this. That's the reality of countries that are trying to stop this thing. The reality of the United States at this point, although it's evolving, I have respect for the fact that each day it gets better and the response gets better, including the response of Trump. But the reality at this point is, too frequently, we are making the mistakes that other countries made a month ago or 2 months ago. And that's wholly unacceptable. We should, you know what I mean? We should be studying what countries that are succeeding, apparently, in stalling the spread of this virus, or even, you know, bringing it to a halt to the extent that they have. We should be studying that, and we should move to a lot of those protocols now, so that we can, you know, we can get ahead of it. Why shouldn't we be the best in the world instead of playing catch-up?
Singapore, South Korea have both done remarkable things. Here is former White House Press Secretary Anthony Scaramucci.
So the next thing that the market knows, and people are really starting to figure this out now, is that Donald Trump is the virus. At the end of the day, what he has done is he's affected and replicated through the executive branch, and he's destroyed the crisis management elements of the executive branch that we need right now, not only here in the United States, but globally. And so the real tragedy of all this is that the Federal Reserve can only do so much to help the markets. You're going to need concomitant fiscal stimulus here and literally handing out free money to people to help them afford their rent, help them pay their waiters and waitresses in their closed restaurants. And again, it's a national tragedy born from one person. But you have to remember, Trump's the president's staff is afraid of him. And so they don't like dealing with him, and they're trying to make something that's very insane, which is President Trump, sound sane.
You know, he hit the nail on the head.
Well, he was on some appearance the other day where, you know, his immediate response to something, they said something like, well, if you were a Trump aide at this point, what would you do? And I think it involved an end of life experience, and you know, it was just like he's been so radically blunt about, you know, it that I wonder, and I don't say this casually, I wonder whether he's being heard. You know, I mean, he may be going to extreme on some of this.
Well, I think we all kind of, you know, he had this cartoonish performance in the White House when he first went out there, but everything I've heard him say since, he's not stupid.
Oh, he's certainly not stupid. And here's the one place where I do think he's perhaps wrong, however, right? And that is he's blaming it all on Trump. And Trump has clearly bumbled this thing at a level so dramatic that he can literally be described as the anti-Churchill. Right? You know what I mean? You think of what would Winston Churchill do? Well, it's the exact opposite is what Trump has done. And so all of our conservative friends who have high regard for Winston Churchill, and you know, they all have their Churchill books on their shelf, which they've never actually read, but if they did read them, they'd find out that Churchill actually went for a big government response to a lot of problems. But they should recognize that what they love about Churchill and what they respect about Churchill is that the guy actually, you know, leveled with people at the time that people needed to be leveled with. And it was painful and difficult, but yet inspiring, because people thought, well, this person's telling me the truth, and now they're calling me to action. And that's the key. You tell people the truth, and then you call them to action much better than lie to them, you know, dissemble things, you know, refuse to take responsibility, and then try to get people to do things. It's a bad scenario. But with that said, I would also want to emphasize that it is not just Trump. It is also a thinking that has been a part of a lot of Republican dogma now going back quite a while. And I'll just give you this one quick example. When we were fighting back in 2009 over the stimulus bill to come out from, you know, to get us out of the 2008 meltdown, Dave Obey, the congressman from northern Wisconsin, put into that bill a whole bunch of measures and structures for pandemic planning. He did it because he said, yeah, the worst thing that could happen is we might come out of this economic downturn and then get hit with some sort of, you know, virus or something like that. We need to be prepared. And in the negotiations to get the support of a handful of Republicans for that stimulus, they took out the pandemic planning stuff. So this isn't new. That wasn't Donald Trump doing that. That was people like Susan Collins,
the soon-to-be former senator from Maine.
She so deserves to be former, and I cannot begin to emphasize this. Her, if you go back on her record, that you want to look where visionary and necessary things should have been done. Again and again, it's the quote-unquote moderate, you know, Republicans like her who kind of negotiate things down to a really stupid place.
All right, we'll pick it up from there. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SliesOffice.com. The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which
They live and work.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic, and the law firm of Gingrich, Thompson, and Walks. All right, so I want to talk to you a little bit about Ron Johnson.
Oh.
John Nichols with us, by the way, Capital Times. Ron Johnson.
Did I die loud enough when you mentioned his name?
Ron Johnson has been making headlines all over the world for his comments. The entire Wisconsin Republican delegation of House members and Ron Johnson voted against the coronavirus relief package. Ron Johnson the other day, when talking about the paid sick leave, paid sick days for workers, said that we need to be incentivizing work, and that that's just improper that we should be forcing small businesses to pay sick leave, even though they're getting a tax credit for this. He wants them. He was talking about using the unemployment mechanism initially. Now, this is what he said when talking to USA Today when it comes to the coronavirus. Actually, it was the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm not denying that a nasty disease, COVID-19, can be, and how it obviously is devastating to someone between 1 and 3.4% of the population. But that means 97 to 99% of the population will get through this and develop immunities and will be able to move beyond this. But we don't shut down our economy because tens and thousands of people will die on the highways. It's a risk we accept.
Yeah. What was his theory? You help me out with this slide. What was his theory about when we lost jobs to China and to...
Creative destruction.
Yeah. So here's the
what's that guy's name? Who's the one that came up with that? Werner Klemper or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's either him or somebody from Hogan's Heroes. but the look, this is his worldview. This is who Ron Johnson is. He is someone who believes that his wealth and privilege will protect him from diseases, ailments, challenges, you know, the realities of life that most people have to experience. It's one of the reasons why he is literally exactly the wrong person to have in any position of authority at any time.
Well, he's the director. He's the chairman of the Senate chairman of the Homeland Security.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very interesting thing. You know, this guy, Alex Azar, who's head of Health and Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nobody knows who he is and nobody cares, right, at this moment. Like, if he steps up to the microphone, nobody's listening, right? They're waiting for Anthony Fauci to step up, right? And it's sort of the same with Ron Johnson. If you know, Ron Johnson may be in charge of a committee, and that's disastrous and problematic, just as it's disastrous and problematic to have, you know, somebody like Alex Azar in charge of Health and Human Services. But I can't imagine that any of Ron Johnson's colleagues, Republicans, conservatives, whatever, have any regard for him. You know, I mean, do you really think anybody's like, geez, let's find out what Ron Johnson says about this, because that will help guide us out of the crisis.
Well, I saw the look on Senator Durbin's face yesterday when somebody from MSNBC asked him about Ron Johnson's comments about sick days and, unemployment. Yeah. And of course, Senator Durbin reminded Senator Johnson that the Belvedere plant that's sitting on the Wisconsin-Illinois border that had to close yesterday, that there are people from Wisconsin that work in that building
quite
as
a lot
well.
Of Wisconsin.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have to go that far, right? There's actually, it's not like things aren't playing out even in Oshkosh, my friend. And see, the problem with Ron Johnson is that he read one.
Did you mean that in a singular way?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the core one.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I realize it's, I understand what you're asking, but I'm going to go to the core one. He read one on Ron book.
Uh-huh.
To him, it was one of the shorter ones. And
which makes great toilet paper, by the way.
Okay, there you go. Because, by the way, I believe that libertarianism has pretty much ended, you know, right now. But he read like one on Ron book that you know, that inspired him, right? And he hasn't thought since then, period.
Did he really read that book?
Maybe somebody read it to him.
Okay.
But the bottom line is, maybe he did books on tape, probably. But the bottom line is, this is a guy who is obsessively libertarian. People don't fully understand, you know, how what a deep underpinning of who he is, this sort of, like, extreme libertarian philosophy is, and the extreme Ayn Rand stuff. And he makes Paul Ryan look like a, you know, worldly democratic socialist. And to have someone who thinks in the way that Ron Johnson does in any kind of position of authority at this point, even as someone who is disregarded by most of his colleagues, is just, it's a measure of so many problems in our politics and in our governance. But the truth of the matter is, we shouldn't spend much time on him. I mean, I think it's appropriate to talk about him here and that. But at the end of the day, we're in a really serious moment in our country.
We are. But
we have to take such a serious moment, recognize the people that are not useful.
All right. Well, as long as we're on the category of people that are not useful.
Yeah.
But think about what it says about Wisconsin, that the entire House delegation on the Republican side from Wisconsin voted against this bill. Jim Sensenbrenner, of course, Brian Stile, as well as Mike Gallagher and Jim Sensenbrenner. Sensenbrenner really should have known better.
Yeah, and then, of course,
Ron Johnson is one of eight senators that voted against it. No other state had an entire delegation vote no.
Yeah, I know. It's a really problematic reality, except when you recall that we will be having an election in November. And the fact of the matter is that I think that our first duty right now is to do every public health intervention we can,
mm-hmm.
and to get ourselves up to speed, to get people mobilized to deal with this.
And donate blood if you can.
Donate blood, you know, practice all the sanitary practices that you should, but also, you know, support our frontline healthcare providers and also police, fire, and other folks who are going to be, in coming weeks, you know, exposing themselves to a lot of danger in order to do what needs to be done. So that's step one, and we can't be unserious about that. That's central. Step two is to address the economic crisis that this has created, and that understand that crisis will linger probably for several years, if not longer. And then step three, of course, is to take names and to understand that when we get done with this, we should recognize who the people were that got in the way of doing steps one and two. And I say that with all seriousness. We should be very, very conscious of it. And it should be a part of our politics going forward, not to punish them. Because I'm not particularly interested, you may be, but not me. I'm not particularly interested in punishing the people that got it wrong. What I am interested in is recognizing the people who are incapable of governing, and in fact incapable of thinking in these times.
In Canada, they're obviously taking some of the same measures we are. They're ahead on testing. There is really no debate about spending the money and making people whole. They're not even having a debate. Honestly, I have not seen, and because I watch Canadian media every day, I have not seen any conservatives criticizing any of the financial packages that Trudeau has offered.
Yeah.
In France, they are making people whole. They're literally suspending people's household bills and mortgages, mm-hmm. and paying them their full salary.
Now, that gets hard economically.
Of course
we
it does.
Understand that. And I understand the complexity of dealing with all of this. But I also understand this. If we want to get focused on what we have to do, we have to recognize that one of the great challenges in America is that we have not developed an adequate social safety net in this country, right? It doesn't exist for a lot of people. I have a neighbor who is a bartender, and she supported closing her bar that she works in before the governor and other people took action. She was in favor of it because she said, we have a lot of older customers who come here. Some of them are smokers and have health conditions. we should close. We have to. So that's how noble she is, because when that bar closed, as it did, she lost her entire income.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is a noble, good person who is willing to lose her own income to protect people.
And there's millions of people just like her.
Millions of them. And we have to incentivize, this is the opposite of Ron Johnson, right? We have to incentivize those people, right? We have to say to them, yeah, you can step up and loudly say, we've got to take these actions to protect people, and you're not going to ruin yourself economically. You're not going to get kicked out of your house. You're not going to be unable to buy food because you did the right thing. Now, I happen to know that my neighbor would do the right thing anyway, even if it did involve a lot of sacrifice for her. And I think most, a tremendous number of other people would. But, you know, this is why I'm so opposite of Ron Johnson. He's afraid of incentivizing people, you know, not to work. I'm afraid of failing to incentivize people to step up and say, we have a moral and a practical duty to save lives.
Let me wrap up today with the situation. And I know as we record this, Bernie Sanders is still in the presidential race. That could change. That could change at any moment.
Sure.
Your thoughts on how this is all, well, obviously Joe Biden is going to be the Democratic nominee. It is quite clear. How do you feel about this situation right now with Bernie Sanders contemplating what to do?
You know, look, I think Bernie Sanders responded to it really well the other day, because some reporter was pressing him about his campaign.
Oh, he snapped.
Yeah, he didn't snap. No, he said the exact right thing. It was the best quote so far of the crisis that we're in. He said, you know, I'm dealing with an effing crisis, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the bottom line.
He might have used the whole word, John.
He did use the whole word. And I'm just, you know, blah, blah, blah. Midwestern, it's what we do. But the bottom line is, I don't think he has to make any decisions right now. Frankly, I don't even think a lot of people care.
He is getting criticism, some say, by the fact that we have elections coming up in the next few weeks, including Wisconsin, that somehow he's putting people's lives in danger because they're showing up at the poll. Now, those people are ignorant because they don't realize there's local elections as well.
Yeah.
But
no, and here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. You may have to delay elections. We are delaying elections. I can tell you this. It's my intent I hope to be able to vote on April 7th. Right? And frankly, if I do vote, I think I'll vote for Bernie Sanders. Right? And whether he's in the race or not, I think he's contributed a great deal to our political discourse in this country. I don't know if, you know, I understand what that means or doesn't mean. You know, that's kind of secondary to the core concept here, that that his decision is important as regards future of the Democratic Party, and there's got a whole bunch of other things. But that's not the heart of where we're at right now. And I do think that to the extent that he makes decisions, I hope that he's in Washington, and or at least wherever the Senate is organizing, how it's organizing, be it virtual or whatever, and that he's a part of that, arguing for ideas and policies that he has advanced. I'm going to make a couple predictions here at the close of this. And here's one prediction. I suspect, I do not know, but I suspect that you're going to see some major actions as regards to the Wisconsin primary. Either it's going to go to a full vote by mail, or it will be delayed. I don't think that the opening of doing the in-person voting is, if we keep on this trajectory, that it's likely to happen.
I applied for my absentee ballot yesterday.
Well, I think it's, I'm just saying that. I'm not sure. These are just, you know, thing. But I also would go a step further and say, I have real doubts about whether we're going to have a Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee this summer. Real doubts. And so, you know, kind of everything's being upended here. And in this process of so many things being upended.
Do we get a mulligan on that?
What do you mean?
In other words.
Yeah, you get to try over. Or, no, I don't think that's how it's going to go. But what I am saying is that I think people, it's very hard to adjust your thinking to what all's going on right now. But if you play out the scenarios, right, and the political scenarios, The primary responsibility of the Democratic Party at this point is to start thinking about the November election, making sure that in Congress they pass national vote-by-mail protocols and ideas to push the states in that direction and provide the funding right now to make the change. Not saying that we'll have this trouble in November, but if by chance we do, to make sure that we have protected democracy in this country. And then in that context, in leading the fight to assure that we have national vote by mail, also thinking about who is the strongest candidate to put forward in that context, and that may be a ticket, it may be Biden for president and somebody for vice president, whatever, but that, to think very seriously about how to do this, because November, forget about what's going on right now, November is going to be the coronavirus election.
It is indeed. And I would be very surprised if Joe Biden is not elected the next president.
I think he's, you know, I think he, circumstances have fallen in his favor, right? A variety of things have happened.
I also think he's risen to the occasion.
I've been very impressed by a lot of what I've heard, and I'm just not here to pick on the guy. But what I will tell you is that, you know, however Democrats convene and whatever they think about, they have to understand that our politics has changed. And in that change of our politics, I would argue that pretty much every message has to be advanced and evolved. And how we talk about things has to be very, very different. And how we talk about coming out of this and recreating a stable, functional society is going to become a great challenge. Biden is a very stable figure who I think people do regard as steady. If he is, in fact, the nominee, his vice president has to be an incredibly visionary figure who can really talk to, in consult, in congruence with Biden, but can talk to the future. And so I'm thinking young, and I'd love to see it be a woman. I'd love to see it be, you know, somebody who's got...
Well, he said it's going to be a woman, so...
Well, that's fine.
We got that nailed down.
I'm good with that.
All right.
You don't understand what I'm saying.
Right.
This has got to be... We really need to understand that most of the political questions that are being asked right now are the questions, are questions that extend from the pre-coronavirus era.
Right.
And we need to start asking the questions that are of the era.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.